are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Good day, Colorado, and thank you for joining us for the March 27th reading of the environment. My name is John. We select articles from the magazine of the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, and Mother Earth News. Today, we'll read the following main articles from the Nature Conservancy magazine, Earth Day Reflections. You might have heard of the following places, but you might not know how we've helped to protect them. And from the magazine of the Sierra Club, Ending Roadkill, How to Make It Safer for the Deer to Cross the Road, written by Ben Goldfarb. Earth Day Reflections. You might have heard of the following places, but you might not know that we've helped to protect them. Earth Day is a time of celebration and reflection. As proud as the Nature Conservancy in Arizona is of all the ecological progress in motion today, we would be remiss if we did not stop and appreciate the legacy of work that we built our organization upon. The projects over the last 57 years bolster and inform us to this day. Here we present a small sample of the partnerships, negotiations, discoveries, and even some clandestine blindfolding that the Nature Conservancy has been a part of in our multi-decade journey to protect and restore this amazing state of Arizona. Cross F Ranch. For decades, the Cross F Ranch of Graham County was the access point to explore approximately 40,000 acres of public land. Situated between Aravaipa Canyon Wilderness and Santa Teresa Wilderness, the site was also an entryway to one of Arizona's vital wildlife corridors. Generously, the owners of the Cross F left their property unlocked so the general public could reach the lands managed by the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service, respectively. But when the ranch changed hands, so did the open-door philosophy. The new proprietor shut down access, cutting people off from their own public lands for nearly 20 years. When the owners made it known that they were looking to sell the land for possible development and subdivision, the Nature Conservancy and other groups across Arizona came together to negotiate and fund a complex conservation deal to protect the property. After purchase, most of the land was entrusted to the Bureau of Land Management to be included in the Nature Conservancy-supported Aravaipa Ecosystem Management Plan. Thanks to the many partners involved, the public land is now back in its rightful owner's hands, the people of Arizona. Yavape Apache Nation Land Transfer. In 2008, the Nature Conservancy purchased a small property called Otter Waters on the Verde River in Camp Verde. The intent was to protect the 20-acre riparian corridor for the immediate time being and transfer the property to Arizona State Parks or a federal agency when possible. But funding and capacity issues kept Otter Waters under the Nature Conservancy's ownership. Meanwhile, the Nature Conservancy's water programs in the Verde River provided an opportunity to open a relationship with the Yavape Apache Nation as they work together to improve irrigation efficiency and convert existing crops to more water-conscious yields. Through these projects, the Nature Conservancy and the Yavape Apache Nation were in a position to discuss relinquishment of Otter Waters, a part of the historic Camp Verde Indian Reservation, back to the nation without any monetary compensation. In 2023, the Nature Conservancy closed on the first transfer of property to a tribal entity. The property will now be used by the nation for river access, minor recreation, ceremonial purposes, and the continued protection of Verde River's natural state. They also assume the in-stream flow rights that TNC initiated, which grant them more power to protect and maintain the river. Although relatively small in acreage, this project is huge in terms of its importance and speaks to years of perseverance and relationship building. just as the Verde and protection teams did excellent work managing Otter waters for many years for conservation outcomes, they have now done a great job in transferring ownership to a valued partner who can better and more meaningfully use this site in perpetuity. Kirchner Caves. Discovered at the base of the Whetstone Mountains by Gary Tenen and Randy Tufts in 1974, the Kirchner Caverns were immediately recognized as special. The kind of special to keep quiet about to protect them from unregulated damage. Little did Tenen and Tufts know, this secrecy would result in 29 years of clandestine meetings, covert negotiations, and unforeseen challenges. The explorers kept their discovery to themselves for 4 years, not even telling the owners of the property, James and Lois Kirchner, until 1978. For a while, Tenen and Tufts thought of developing the caves for public use by themselves. But members of the Kirchner family were impressed with the work done by Arizona State Parks, and all parties agreed that the best way forward would be to contact the agency instead. Nicknamed Xanadu and Secret Cave, Tenen and Tufts continued to insist on the utmost secrecy when involving new people in the project and would only present what they had discovered via in-person visits requiring blindfolds, misdirection, and spaces tight enough to get stuck in. In spite of the extensive obstacles, Arizona State Parks was very interested in acquiring the caverns. Arizona's governor was informed about the site and taken on tour soon after. Governor Babbitt, a geology major back in the day, quickly recognized the value of the property and brought in the Nature Conservancy to provide the vital bridge funding needed for the purchase. Eventually, a bill approving the acquisition of Kirchner Caverns passed through both the Arizona House of Representatives and Arizona Senate on the same afternoon in 1988. It would still take another 10 years of planning, legislation, mining, and legal challenges before the upper caverns could finally open to the public in 1999, followed by the lower caverns in 2003. Hassayampa River Preserve. The Hassayampa River flows mostly underground from its source near Prescott on down south to join the Gila River. But for 5 miles on that run in an area just south of Wickenburg, the granite bedrock domes up and pushes a year-round water flow to the surface. The Hassayampa River Preserve encompasses 770 acres along this waterway. The area was once home, at various times in its history, to the first carp farm in Arizona, a stagecoach station, a railroad station, fruit trees, cattle, and a dude ranch known as Garden of Allah, named after a popular book at the time. Unfortunately, it eventually deteriorated into a poorly maintained habitat and trailer park. But 1974 brought new owners, Norman and Dorothy R. Likes, who saw the environmental value of the land. They tended to its restoration themselves before selling 330 acres to the Nature Conservancy in 1986. TNC spent another year rehabilitating the property and opened it to the public in 1987. Dorothy donated more land to the preserve shortly before her death in 2004, nearly doubling the property in size and completing the Likes vision of reuniting lands on both sides of the railroad tracks. Maricopa County and TNC entered into an agreement in 2017, giving the county management over the entire property. San Rafael Ranch. A mile and a half north of Lokeel, Arizona, sits a historic cattle ranch that was not only used for filming movies, such as Oklahoma, but was also successful enough to catch the social bandit Pancho Villa's eye on more than one occasion. In the 90s, the Sharp family, owner of the 22,000-acre San Rafael Ranch, started to look into protecting the property from eventual subdivision and development. By 1998, the family had a purchase agreement with Arizona State Parks, but at the last minute, they had to withdraw due to tax issues. They had no choice but to list the property on the open market. Fortunately, the Nature Conservancy stepped in with a solution. Through the acquisition of all shares of the family corporation, they were able to negotiate the purchase themselves, freeing the family of the tax implication. Thanks to the Nature Conservancy's involvement, the property was able to come under conservation easement with Arizona State Parks. TNC retained a small portion of the property as well under conservation easement to allow them to continue as a partner in the protection of the San Rafael Valley. Shield Ranch. Shield Ranch was one of the first farms in the Verde Valley and a pioneer in irrigation ditch use in the area. And due to Arizona water rights, the property maintains property right to the water flow on the Verde River to this day. In 2010, the Nature Conservancy purchased 300 acres of the ranch to secure the precious water rights for conservation purposes and to prevent development. Soon after, TNC proposed a new idea to the Hauser family, local multi-generational farmers who are already partnering with TNC on other water conservation projects like solar-powered ditch gates. They asked the Hausers to turn Shield Ranch into test grounds for the production of malted barley, a winter crop that utilized a fraction of the water needed for more traditional Verde Valley crops like alfalfa. The first 15-acre test was a resounding success, and production quickly stepped up to 150 acres the next season, and then 433 acres around the valley a few years later. Verde Valley continues to provide Sinagua Malt, Arizona's first commercial malt house, with highly regarded barley malt used in commercial and home breweries across Arizona. Babbo Camari Ranch. Once owned by the King of Spain, the Babbo Camari Ranch was acquired by Frank Cullen Brophy in 1935. Even this early in the century, Brophy recognized the threats from overgrazing, drought, and flooding that were present on the property and initiated conservation policies for the management of the land that are still used today. Almost 100 years later, more than 60 direct descendants of Brophy are current members of a family partnership committed to preserving 18,000 acres central to the ranch. These third and fourth generation Brophys have collaborated with the Nature Conservancy to eventually place 16,000 acres of the property into conservation easements with the Bureau of Land Management. 3,300 acres have already been allocated, and work continues to place the rest into easements that will help Frank Cullen Brophy's vision of protection and conservation persevere. It is this legacy that we will carry into the next 60 years as we continue to work with partners and supporters to take meaningful actions to inspire positive change to protect Arizona's natural treasures. Our second main article from the magazine of the Sierra Club, Ending Roadkill, How to Make It Safer for the Deer to Cross the Road. The Southern Rockies were shattered in the 1970s when Interstate 70 drove an asphalt wedge through Colorado. The four-lane route, one of the longest veins in the country's then new circulatory system of interstate highways, spurred human economies. Denverites drove west to ski each winter, and peaches and cherries flowed east in the summer. As I-70 connected people, however, it divided wild animals. Traffic blocked wide-ranging creatures like elk, mule deer, and mountain lions from reaching their customary habitat and killed them when they tried to cross the pavement. Biologists eventually gave the interstate a dire nickname, the Berlin Wall for Wildlife. Like the original Berlin Wall, I-70 may prove an impermanent barrier. Since the early 2000s, conservationists have sought to retrofit the highway with structures that would permit animals to safely wander over and under its lanes. A half century after the interstate first cleaved the Rockies, that goal finally appears close to fulfillment. Even a year and a half ago, wildlife crossings felt kind of like a pipe dream, Stefan Erkernes, the director of Colorado Field Conservation at the Denver Zoo, told me last summer. Now, there's not really a question anymore that it's going to happen. One July morning, I joined Akernis and his colleague, Alex Wells, to survey the ecosystem through which I-70 had punched. We drove to the crest of East Vail Pass, where the highway cuts through vast blocks of public land, and Wells pulled off to the shoulder. A stream of tractor trailers hurtled past. The triangular wedge of Pacific Peak towered above ski slopes, still smudged with snow. We scrambled up an embankment into an airy copse of spruce and fir, floored with marsh marigolds. "Come on, where are you?" Wells muttered. After a few minutes of searching, we found what he sought, a motion-activated camera strapped to a post. That wildlife crossings should someday come to I-70 is, in large measure, a testament to the power of cameras. Since 2015, researchers have set camera traps along I-70 to monitor the menagerie that dwells in the highway's vicinity. The project, a collaboration between the Zoo, Rocky Mountain Wild, and Summit County Safe Passages, has revealed that East Vail Pass is a biodiversity hotspot. Among its highway side fauna are moose, bighorn sheep, bobcats, martens, and, most elusive of all, lynx, perhaps 300 of which live in Colorado. In 8 years of camera trapping, scientists have documented 5 lynx, all on the interstate's south side, a powerful suggestion that I-70 is restricting the cat's range. By 2020, the camera research had clearly demonstrated that East Vail Pass was a worthy candidate for wildlife crossings. That year, an engineering firm released a potential design featuring 3 passages, 2 capacious underpasses, and an hourglass-shaped overpass with miles of fencing between them to keep animals off the highway. Still, the crossing's prospects remained uncertain. Inflation and rising construction costs soon drove their forecast price tag from $21 million to $32 million. A pittance in the context of immense public transportation budgets, but not chump change either. It went from being a biology problem to a fundraising problem, Akernis said. A turning point arrived in November 2021 when the bipartisan infrastructure law created a grant program earmarking $350 million for new wildlife crossings, the largest pot of money ever allocated to animal-friendly construction in the United States. The program requires states to contribute money as well, which spurred Colorado's legislature to pass a bill devoting $5 million to crossing the following year. The new state and federal funding sources mean that construction on the I-70 crossings could begin in the next few years. Suddenly, all of these pieces are starting to gel, Akernis said as we traipsed through the forest. East Vail Pass is far from the only place where wildlife crossings are ascendant. Animal passage are not a new concept. France began building game bridges over country roads for deer in the 1950s, and Germany, Switzerland, and other neighboring nations soon followed. American engineers built a few crossings in the 1960s and 70s for mule deer in Wyoming and Utah, but the United States has remained a laggard compared with Europe. Wildlife crossings gained traction in the U.S. around 2000, as biologists demonstrated that passages and roadside fences could save the public money by preventing costly crashes with large animals like deer, elk, and moose. In Colorado, crossings have proved their worth on Highway 9, where 2 overpasses and 5 underpasses have slashed roadkill rates by more than 90% since 2015. Crossings tend to take diverse forms for the simple reason that different species have different passage requirements. Whereas predators like coyotes are content to sleek through narrow underpasses, fleet-footed and far-sighted creatures such as pronghorn prefer bridges with long sightlines that allow them to spot danger. If you are a mountain lion, you need something very different than an elk, Wells pointed out. This, then, is another valuable role for the roadside cameras. Aside from showing where animals are crossing, they also alert biologists to which animals are crossing and allow them to tailor crossings to local users. Until the I-70 camera traps captured evidence, for example, biologists did not realize that bighorn sheep lived along East Vail Pass. Now that we know there are bighorn sheep, we have to think about that, Ekernes said. Even once the I-70 crossings are built, whenever that may be, the camera trapping will continue for years. After all, you cannot tell whether crossings are truly helping without before and after data. During my visit with Ekernes and Wells, we checked and set up cameras on both sides of I-70, strolling through aspen stands, picking our way along deer trails, clambering over deadfall as jumbled as pickup sticks. Sometimes the highway disappeared behind screens of trees, but like the creatures living within its ambit, we never escaped its oceanic roar. You feel like you're absolutely out in the middle of nowhere, Wells said as we installed a new camera in a willow-lined valley, a sublimely peaceful spot, save for the whine of cars and trucks. But then you have that constant reminder. Despite the highway's racket, animals remained plentiful. When we checked the camera's memory cards, we saw lots of elk, the occasional coyote, and a snowshoe hare, startled into a leap by some unseen predator. Mostly what we saw were mule deer. Hundreds and hundreds of them, browsing shrubs and gazing placidly at the camera with big, liquid eyes. For all its ecological harms, I-70 doesn't actually inflict much roadkill. Its traffic is so constant that animals rarely attempt to cross it. But when they do, they often meet a fate as predictable as it is tragic. At day's end, we visited the body of a cow elk who had died as she had braved the interstate's westbound lanes. She staggered off the asphalt to expire, and now her carcass lay sprawled in the grass, jaw shattered, guts and eyes devoured by scavengers, ribcage exposed to the sky. It was an ignominious ending to a being who'd been so elegant in life. The wildlife crossings would come too late for her, but not, perhaps, for the rest of her highway-side herd. And with the remaining time, we'll look very quickly at this day in history. On March 27th in 1625, upon the death of James I, Charles I ascended the throne of Great Britain and Ireland. In 1814, at the Battle of Horseshoe Bend in the Creek War, Andrew Jackson and his 3,000 troops defeated the Creek Indians, slaughtering more than 800 warriors and imprisoning 500 women and children. On March 27th in 1915, American domestic Mary Mallon, better known as Typhoid Mary, was placed under a quarantine on North Brother Island, New York City, that lasted until her death in 1938. A typhoid carrier, she was allegedly responsible for multiple outbreaks of typhoid fever. On this date in 1958, Nikita Khrushchev replaced Nikolai Belugin as Premier of the Soviet Union. And in 1963, American director and screenwriter Quentin Tarantino, whose films including Reservoir Dogs in 1992 and Pulp Fiction in 1994, are noted for their stylized violence, razor-sharp dialogue, and fascination with film and pop culture, was born. In 1964, South Central Alaska was struck by a 9.2 magnitude earthquake that was the strongest quake ever registered in the United States. On March 27th in 1998, the drug Viagra from the pharmaceutical company Pfizer was approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for use in treating erectile dysfunction. And finally, on March 27th in 47 BC, the legendary Cleopatra, aided by her Roman lover Julius Caesar, was reinstated as co-ruler of Egypt. And that concludes our reading. Thank you for joining us for the March 27th reading of The Environment. My name is John.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.